Marlena Lieber for Blind Spot, a soon-to-be happening program on ACB Radio. Blind Spot is where we'll talk about no-tech, low-tech kinds of stuff. Andy Warhol once said we'll all get 15 minutes of fame before we die, so I'm offering you yours. You're doing something neat? Can I interview you? Drop me an email to Marlena, M-A-R-L-A-I-N-A, at acbradio.org.
This is Jonathan Mosen. Welcome to the program. And owing to an unforeseen and hostile takeover... Oh, look, it's repeating itself. Can you believe that? It just won't stop. Owing to an unforeseen and hostile takeover, this is not the program that you thought it was. This is now Blonde Line. Yes, it's the program especially for people who happen to be blonde. Very interesting thing, this. There are a number of areas that Blonde Line will cover. For example, there are two distinct schools of thought about what it's like to be blonde. There are some people who say that with the proper training and opportunity, being blonde can be reduced to the level of a physical nuisance. Of course, there are others who say that when you're blonde, you need some special accommodations to succeed in society, including special descriptive videos so that people can have things explained to you when you're blonde, because you need extra explanation. So we hope you'll enjoy the program. And on Blind Line today, we're going to be speaking with somebody who, actually, I think he's just gone. I think that noise was our guest disappearing. Hopefully he will call back. Are you there with us, Mike?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. Well, there was a funny noise, and it sounded like somebody had popped off, but that's okay. Mike Calvo.
I thought it was part of your joke.
Mike Calvo was on the line. Mike is an entrepreneur of considerable note in the blindness community, because many of you will already have one of his products, which is the radio webcaster. And I met Mike in Louisville and thought it would be good to get him on the program and talk a little bit about not just his product, which is interesting, but also his future plans for radio on the internet, what he can tell us of them, and a little bit about himself and what makes an entrepreneur such as Mike succeed in this sort of area. So Mike Calvo from sunny Miami, Florida, will you tell me there's a thunderstorm happening? It's nice to have you on Blind Line.
Thank you. Actually, we're getting a nice bunch of lightning happening underway, and I'm making sure I'm on a phone that no matter what happens, short of a lightning blast on the phone line itself, that I'll be with you all the way through.
Well, you know, the thing is that with Blind Line, the unexpected often happens, and we just cope with that. And incidentally, anybody's free to give Mike a call and ask any question about the radio webcaster or himself or anything you would like to ask him. If you would like to do that, feel free to interrupt us at any time. Give us a call, courtesy of spiderphone.com. We are here, and the number is a New York number. That's 212-812-2800. That's 212-812-2800, and enter the PIN 1083-4173. That PIN again, 1083-4173. And we already have a call who's just been and gone. Mike, nice to have you on the show. Tell me a bit about yourself, because I understand that you're from a Cuban American background. Is that correct?
Yes, I was born in Atlanta, Georgia. And basically received, my parents are Cuban, they came here in 1960, shortly after Castro took over. And I was born in Atlanta in 67, and then we moved to Michigan, to Michigan School for the Blind, which is where I received all my quote-unquote blind training, you know, how to use a stick and that kind of thing. So I was about seven. Then we moved back to Miami, Florida, and I've been here ever since, with the exception of moving around a little bit to different parts of the country, just where I've lived, doing music and things like that.
I'm interested in whether there is a cultural difference in the way that, I mean, and it's difficult not to be kind of stereotypical or generalist in these comments, but is blindness culturally viewed differently in a Cuban-type family?
Very much so. My parents, the Cuban community, unfortunately, in a lot of the quote unquote third world countries. Oh, That was interesting.
Yeah, keep going.
Are you still there?
I am.
Okay. A lot of the quote-unquote third world countries, they look at the situation of being blind kind of, you know, well, now you've got, you know, no hope, your family's got to raise you and take care of you, or you could always, of course, sell pencils, that kind of thing. And my parents, when I was born, they didn't, being here in the United States, they didn't believe that was what was, you know, they weren't going to follow that framework, I guess. So I was raised, even at some points, too liberally, because my parents didn't want to put any kind of restraint on me. I was always being challenged to achieve, and not in a negative way, but in a positive way by my parents, being told I could do just about anything I wanted to do. The sky was the limit. As a matter of fact, my father used to tell me, you know, that they did such a good job that everybody else in the world knew I was blind except for me. So, you know, it was kind of cool.
And so, what drove you to the kind of work that you are doing now, where you're making a living pretty much off your own wits? You're kind of coming up with innovative new ideas and trying to sell them. That must be a kind of unstable existence in some respects.
Well, yes and no. I believe I'm a person that from a very young age I was kind of concerned or upset, if you will, about the way that some view blind people, even here in the United States, and how they try and place limitations on what a blind person can achieve. It started in school, and while unfortunately those people mean very well by saying, well, you can't do that or you can't do the other, and you know, you need to be realistic about your expectations and this and that and the other, sometimes they tend to overdo it, and they tend to, instead of encourage and enlighten, maybe discourage. And that's basically what happened to me in school. I was constantly being, the focus was more on what I wasn't able to do than what I was able to do. And when I got into I started in the music industry when I was a kid. When I was 13 years old, I started in radio. And I started in a public access radio here, and got my first class federal communications license at the time, when I was 14. Freaked some people out. Unfortunately, the FCC kind of deregulated that a year later. So, but hey, it was fun. And I was on my way to working in radio. At the time, the technology was not such that without having to go in there and basically braille up everything on a brailler, and using dymal labels on everything, I wasn't going to be able to make a reasonable DJ on the air, being able to put my records in order and so on and so forth. So I moved into working more in the club scene and spinning records in the club scene, which of course, you know, you bring your own records in, you bring your own set, you know, you're your own boss there, I guess. And I did pretty well at that. When I was 21, I got married, and I said, well, this is no life. I at that point, I had opened up a recording studio and been doing music, which is kind of a natural progression for working in the music, you know, as a DJ here in South Florida, at least. You know, you start in the clubs, and then eventually you start working in club music, so on and so forth, and that wasn't the life that I wanted to bring to my family. I had a kid come in, newly married, so on and so forth. You know, I wasn't going to be able to work 72 hours in the studio anymore, and you know, so I had to get responsible. So I went and I got a job, and it was the first time that I had gotten out into the quote-unquote real world.
Let's come back to that in just a second, because I have a call who's been hanging on there for a while, probably incurring long distance, from area code 920. So you have a question for Mike Calvo. Hello there. Maybe not. All right, well, but let's keep going then, Mike. You were talking about your job that you got in the real world.
Yeah. Anyway, I found that it was very strange. In the music industry, a blind person is considered an equal, if not superior, to others, simply because our ears are better, that kind of thing, you know. And I had always been accepted in the music industry, and when I got into the real world, it was, well, we don't know what to do with you people, you know, advancement, what kind of advancement do you expect? I mean, you're basically lucky you've got this, you know, entry-level position. And I was, I'd gone from making a lot of money in the music industry to making about $13,000 a year, which was below the poverty level, just because I wanted to eventually, you know, make a name, you know, make a career jump for myself and be able to be a 9-to-5-er. And that was kind of trashed by a supervisor who just didn't think before she spoke. Being young and rebellious and so on and so forth, I got very upset and thought I was going to do something about it. And called the guy who had set up my computer at the bank that I was working up at the time and said, "What am I going to do? This is what my supervisor said when I asked about advancement." He said, "Well, Mike, you know, the only way that you're going to ever achieve anything realistically is if you learn that computer. Behind that computer keyboard, you and a sighted person are equal." You know, and that really struck me. I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I started lugging home this IBM PS2 every day after working 12 hours a day. I'd bring this book and this computer home with me. Thanks to the people at Recording for the Blind, it was called then, they recorded manuals about things that most people would probably never use again. They were so kind about doing that. I'm a very big advocate of that organization.
Mm.
As to what they did for me personally. It was great. They recorded all the manuals. I learned, it took me about 5 or 6 months, but I learned mainframe connectivity and the things that would help a blind person in most customer service type jobs. And I set out to basically at 22 change the world, I guess, if you will. I mean, that was just, I was angry, and I wasn't going to let, you know, I realized I could curl up in a closet somewhere or sit in a rocking chair and do nothing, or I could go out and at least, I may not be able to do something for everybody, but at least a few people I could touch in my life, I was going to make a difference. And that was when my company, United Computer Consultants of South Florida, was born in about 1992. And we started placing blind people. Our first placement was at Ryder Trucks, and here in the United States, they're moving, you know, a very large moving organization. As a matter of fact, the employee that was placed there is still there today, and is doing very, very well. And that moved on to working at American Express, Federal Express, Eastern Airlines, Southwestern Airlines, Northwestern Airlines, Marriott. I mean, the list of 'cause my thing was, I wasn't going to throw blind people into a job that was with a company that was going to close down in a year. So I would go after the Fortune 500 companies, and I was lucky enough to work. I mean, I've even done work for the FBI on their systems for blind people that work for the FBI. So it was a very exciting thing. Then in 1995 or so, when Windows 3.1 really started taking off, actually United Computers opened up in 1990. In about 1994 or so, government cutbacks and just a lack of blind people. My company had placed about 480 blind people in 3 years in Florida and in Alabama and at the federal level. We were out of blind people down here in Dade County, in Miami at least, that needed work. and the budget cutbacks and everything, and Windows 3.1 kind of got in my way. So I went back to music for a while, and came back in 1997 into doing computers again, learned Windows 98, 95 at the time, just picked up the computer, and I've always had a knack for the computer, and learned 95 with DOS tapes, and whatever they taught, and went and got certified with JAWS as a JAWS scripter, and started working again, doing placement work, and just playing around with the music, and started and got on this PC audio list, and really got interested in seeing and got excited about seeing other blind people that were similarly motivated. And I'm not just saying this because you're here, Jonathan. You know, because I'm talking to you. You have truly, truly been an example to me in seeing a person who has not allowed your blindness to keep you down. And it is an encouragement to me as a blind person to see you and others that are on the list, people like Snowman and people like Kelly Sapergia and just so many others that are there, DJC. I mean, I can sit here and name off people for hours that I see that have been influenced by encouraging words, the help that the community has created for itself. And when I saw that, I got excited because I said, man, here is what we've always wanted, is to be able to communicate, to be able to be a community, to understand what not just deal with 4 or 5 or 10 blind people in our own community. You know, and that was a big thing here. There was only, you know, I remember, I'll never forget, and maybe it sounds stupid, but I'll never forget the first time I went to the Lighthouse for the Blind and saw another blind person smoking a cigarette. I had smoked cigarettes at the time and sighted people and said, "You smoke?" You know, I don't smoke anymore, thank God. But I was like, wow, you know, other blind people smoke cigarettes too. And I felt bad because I sounded like everybody else.
Yeah, yeah, but, yeah. Let me ask you before we move on to the radio webcaster thing, and you know, peer support is so important, and what you say about all sorts of email lists is right. You know, we've got to help each other out. But let me backtrack a bit, because you made some interesting comments about the discouragement that you faced that really motivated you to learn the PC. I wonder whether you think the Americans with Disabilities Act has made a difference in that sort of thing. For instance, now that the ADA is well and truly in place, do you think that sort of discrimination still goes on more subtly, or is that a problem that's been averted somewhat now?
I don't believe that the ADA, I mean, and I don't mean to rain on anyone's parade, it certainly is not from a statistical point of view. It is only from a Mike Cowell point of view. I wanted to, you know, to put the disclaimer up before I say anything, and that is that I do not believe that the ADA has made much difference at all in the way that blind people are looked at for jobs or anything else. If they don't want to hire you, man, they're not going to hire you. They'll find something, you know, whether it's that you're not academically prepared, that you're not just different things it basically still comes down to when you walk in, you are judged on sight by sight alone, and most people start with an A1A in school and they work their way down to an F3F. I would venture to say that a blind person starts with about a C and works his way up from there. You know, sure, he can walk, he can talk, he can dress himself, he got himself to the interview, but what's it going to be like in a real situation? And that may sound very negative and very derogatory, but unfortunately, at least in my experiences, and I believe I am a little qualified to say that from working with over 480 placements, I've found that to be true. Every single placement is a challenge. Every single time that a blind person goes in to get a job, I've never walked into an interview with a blind person and they say, 2 minutes after he gets there, yep, like him, he's got the job. You know, it just doesn't happen. And the ADA has not done anything. As a matter of fact, I'm in a situation right now with the apartment complex I live in that I've been waiting for a handicapped parking space. The ADA requires it to be here. And I've asked for it nicely for the last 6 months. They haven't put it in yet. And now I'm going to start making some noise about it. because we need a handicap parking space because my lovely wife can't get things out of the car, has to get things out of the car by herself because I can't get from the middle of the parking lot to where I need to get without possibly getting hit by a car. And by the time they finally get something done through fighting, it's going to be another 6 to 12 months, you know. And so it looks good on paper, you know, but when you get Clint Eastwood and people like that getting up in front of Congress like they did recently to try and, you know, to say that it's not fair and this and that and the other, you know, it makes you kind of wonder, was it just paper? You know, here we are in the year 2000, and they're talking about people haven't had enough time to comply, you know. It's only been 10 years.
One of the arguments that people advance is that the ADA is actually a lot more powerful than people give it credit for. It's just that blind people seem to be reluctant to use it. Do you accept that maybe blind people aren't taking advantage of the provisions that are effective in the law?
Oh, boy. Can we talk? The thing is this. Blind people, we tend to come in two flavors. We tend to come either in the very laid back or the very aggressive. And there needs to be a middle point, you know, where we can do a combination of lobbying / education. You know, and I don't believe that that's necessarily being done on an individual basis. It is being done, for example, by the ACB. I was just out at the ACB conference, and I see where the ACB is trying to instruct. They're not trying to dictate, but they are trying to instruct organizations on how a blind person operates. I don't believe that enough of us are participating in that, and I think that a lot of us are either staying quiet or just bitching. And we get that, oh gosh, here comes that bitching blind person again, you know, instead of sitting down and saying, hey, listen, like I did here at the department, I've asked for 6 months. I finally told the manager here, I said, listen, I've asked you for 6 months very nicely. I've explained to you on several occasions why. I said, unfortunately, I'm going to give you today's this date. I'm going to give you 21 days from today. If not, I will pursue it with the housing authority, and I will take it to paper. And at that point, you're set up for a lawsuit. I said, I'm sorry, and I don't want to do that. But that's what you're forcing me to do because, well, we have disputes with this company, and we have a dispute with the parking lot company. I said, that's irrelevant. I have a need, and you're not fulfilling it. And I need that need met. And if you won't do it by me asking and giving me what I require by law, then I will demand it, and you will have to give it to me legally. Period. You know, and I think that's the approach that most of us have to take instead of either coming in and saying, I'm going to sue you from day one, or just saying shut up and just, you know, keeping the anger inside and letting it affect us and the way we deal with others and the way that we sometimes, even walking into a new situation, just say, well, this is what happened to me in the situation before, so I'm not going to give this person a chance because we didn't work it out.
Hey, assertiveness training is a big thing, getting it just right. Let me ask you about successful placement. What's the secret to successful placement? Because you obviously were pretty effective in that.
I think that what I used to do is I would go in and I would talk to the head of a I would go in with EVR people, with Division of Vocational Rehabilitative Services people, to talk to the people in human resources and say, hey, how about if I brought you a qualified applicant that would probably stay with you longer than any employee, would be very appreciative of the work, and we'd be able to, you know, really get that person to be an effective team player in your company. Besides, you'd be a very good corporate citizen, you'd look good to the community, and you would really be helping some people. Give me the opportunity to sit down in front of your supervisors and explain to them how it would work, and then you guys, you know, let us know. And I would go up, I would go in a couple of days before, make sure I could access their mainframe, make sure I could access some of their account information, so on and so forth, if it were a bank or if it were an airline or a credit card processor or whatever, a cable company, an alarm company, whatever. I mean, I've even put together a gas station that a blind person can totally run. And it was, go in there and just be sure that you answer the question. Sometimes the simplest of questions, as a blind person would say, duh, don't you know? but they don't. And it's not that they're stupid. They're ignorant. And there's a big difference between ignorance and stupidity. That was the main thing. I'd go in and talk to this group of people, and basically the supervisors, and say, now, I know productivity is an issue, but I said, now, does that mean every time the blind person needs to go to the bathroom, another employee needs to take them by the hand and walk them? I said, no, that's not it. That's not the deal. If a blind person doesn't meet their productivity, if they can't work it out, then you need to fire them. They don't get any preferential treatment. A lot of supervisors look at a blind person as a babysitting job.
Well, let me ask you an inverse question from the other one. Has the ADA actually harmed that? Because I suppose that it could be argued that people are more reluctant to take on somebody with a disability because if they're not performing, it's difficult to fire them without some sort of claim of discrimination. So people get away with coming up with some sort of excuse that's not disability related for not giving them a chance in the first place.
I think that, it hasn't created any more problems than civil rights movements have here in the United States. Listen, Jonathan, here in the United States, I can sue you for spitting on the sidewalk. Now, whether I win or not, I'll have my day in court, and by golly, I'll be able to accuse you of spitting on the sidewalk and offending me. And that's the kind of country we live in. But, I believe ADA legislation, I have yet to see any case, even the AOL case, that was in the media for, had its 2 minutes in the media. I haven't seen any results, have you?
No, I think it's still waiting for its day in court, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, and that was much ago. So it's a very slow and drawn-out process that ADA, anybody who thinks that they're going to get quick answers with ADA isn't going to happen. Now, I will say one thing. It did happen to me. I owned a condominium here, and I had been to 3 board meetings. And I had told them in the board meetings, I live alone. I need my if correspondence need to be sent to me, I either need, and they're of an emergency nature, I need to either be called, and I gave them my home phone, my office phone, my cellular number, my beeper number. That sounds like enough ways to contact a human being. I said, something along those lines. I need to be contacted by phone, or I need them provided in a media that I can read, whether it be Braille, whether it be text on a disc that I could read with my Braille and speak, or whatever. I need it. These people didn't do that. My bank was automatically paying my condominium maintenance fees, and I was not aware of the fact that the bank, they had changed the lockbox address. And the lockbox had changed. They had notified everyone on their statement, but they had not notified me. And that's a pretty important thing. And the first time that they did something like that, they tried to charge me $150 in lawyer's fees because of that they had to go after me and pay a lawyer $150 to finally pick up a phone and say, Mr. Calvo, please call our offices about your condominium account. Which I promptly did and brought up to date, and everybody was fine. The money had been sitting in my account for the last 3 months, and everybody was fine. I went before the condo association. They forgave $150. They had to eat the $150. The second time, they said no. The second time, they made the mistake. There had been a violation on my back porch there was something broken, a light or something that I hadn't noticed, and they had written me a couple of letters about the violation. They ended up putting me with a lawyer again for $190 or something. And I went to the association. I said, no, I've told you on many occasions, I even reiterated at the last meeting I was at, that you need to call me about such things. They didn't do it. And it ended up, the fight went on and on and on. It got to a federal level. I had a very kind lawyer. The bill, the legal bill was $18,000+ on my side and almost $40,000 on theirs. And the housing authority got involved and threatened that they were going to come and examine the place, and all of a sudden everything was fine. Their insurance company paid my lawyers. They sent me a letter of apology. They did everything. So in that particular case, the ADA did work, because that was a reasonable accommodation. To pick up a telephone and call me is a reasonable accommodation, wouldn't you say?
What a remarkable story, though. I mean, it could be argued that if you're getting print letters from them, you're getting print letters from everybody else, and it's your responsibility to have a human reader coming in at appropriately regular intervals to deal with that print mail, though.
It is, but we live in an electronic society. Most of my bills are paid electronically. Most of my bills don't even come to me. They're withdrawn out of my bank account. I can prove that. I live an electronic life. That is the way that I, as a blind person, have chosen to live my life, being free and living in free country. I have the right to live my life as I desire, and no one can sue me or cause me problems because I should have done this or I should have done that. You know, it doesn't say in any law book that a blind person must have his life that way, that a blind person must have a reader come in. I can't afford it. Now what?
Yeah.
I can only afford to pay my bills electronically. I can't afford to have a reader. You know, now if American Express wants to send me a reader once a month, they're welcome to do it.
Quite right, too. We're speaking with Mike Calvo, who, of course, is well known in the blind community for the radio webcaster, which we haven't even talked about yet, but we will. And if you're listening to this program live from 1 till 3 GMT, that's 9 to 11 Eastern on Wednesday evening, 6 to 8 Pacific on Wednesday evening, then you can call and talk with Mike if you wish about anything. The number is a New York one, and we thank Spiderphone.com for donating these facilities. The number is 1-212-812-2800. That's 212-812-2800. When you dial in, you'll be asked to enter a PIN, and that is 1-08-34173. That's 1-08-34173. And we have a call from area code 336. Hello.
Hi, John. This is Jess from North Carolina.
Yeah, go for it, Jess.
Yeah, I was going to actually ask... okay, question, if you saw him on. Sure, man, how are you? I'm doing good. I think I saw you at the ACB convention.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, nice to hear you again. I was just going to ask you, why do you think that, I'll probably have to revert back to this, but why do you think that as a blind community, I guess, that we have to demand, I guess, what we want as a, you know, an individual. Like you said with the bank deal, you know, as soon as you took stuff to the highest level, they said, all right, fine, you know, we don't want, you know, we don't want nothing to happen to us, so we're just going to, you know, we'll do what you want. You know, why do you think that is?
Well, I think, Jess, that a lot of it has to do with a lack of education. People,
yeah.
You know, in today's corporate world, man, a lot of people want, you know, supervisors want you to be able to cook the pizza, manage the staff, drive the pizza out, and even cut it up for the people when you get it there. You know, and we, unfortunately, a blind person, yes, to a certain degree, we are multitasking.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we do need to have a certain amount of control of our environment. And that's a fact that I've had to deal with, at least in myself, and maybe I'm not talking for all of us. Everybody's created differently. But yeah, I have a pretty versatile group of things that I do. However, they still sit in a certain framework. And for somebody to know my limitations or not, I need to educate them, and I need to help them understand. And like I said, it's a clear case of ignorance and not stupidity. If I had a VR teacher that, you know, a voc rehab person tell me, well, you can't do this or you can't do that, I would find it to be quite strange for that person to tell me that I can't do something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without giving me some darn good reasons. Besides mm-hmm. the fact, most sighted people look at us, Jess, and say, if I were like that, I wouldn't be able to do it. So naturally, they couldn't.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree with you there 100%, man.
You know, and that's the problem that we need to really educate. And that's why when we would go out and talk to these organizations, we would educate them. Listen, this is, you know, I know that your bottom line is productivity, but let's get some of the other concerns you have. You know, can we talk? You know,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And really get in there and educate people.
Mm-hmm. One quick question. Do you think sighted people have gotten better about that?
I believe that technology is narrowing the gap. I believe that blind people, through technology and through our own ability to realize what we can do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is making a big difference. You know, with mm-hmm. a blind person, we don't just have our own handicap to deal with. We have environmental handicaps to deal with.
Oh yeah.
Handicaps that have been placed on us by society, by well-meaning ignorant people, by our own parents. You know what I'm saying? Every
mm-hmm.
blind person, that every single one of us is different. Every
mm-hmm.
single one.
Oh,
I've
yeah.
not I've not done two job placements that even in the same job that are exactly the same. One guy's fingers jitter on the keyboard. The other guy's don't. The other guy needs to feel around the keyboard to get to where he needs to go. The other guy lands his hands right on the keyboard, lands on A, S, D, F, G.
Yeah.
So every single one of us are different. Some people are more cautious. When I was a kid, I used to walk around without a cane. Okay? I'm 32 years old now. I wouldn't do that if you paid me.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was like that, too. I wouldn't do it now either.
You know what I'm saying? So as you get older, and as your perspectives change, so does your abilities. You know.
Yeah.
You become less invincible as you get older. Hey, good questions. Yes, I've got to move on, but they are excellent questions, and thank you for raising them. You're listening to Blind Lion. I'm Jonathan Mosen. Mike Calvo is my guest from the radio webcaster. Taking your calls. Our number is New York 212-812-2800, courtesy of spiderphone.com. 212-812-2800. Then enter the PIN 108-341-73. That PIN 108-341-73. Area code 706. Good evening to you.
Hey, good evening. Joe Norton here in Dalton, Georgia. Boy, I can relate to that thing about walking around without a cane. When I was in school, I went off and on. I had a cane sometimes, and then they got mad at me because I wasn't careful enough with it or something like that and took it away. So it's like on and off, you know. You know, you're going to use the cane. Okay, no, you can't use it for a while, you know. And of course, nothing really, I haven't done anything bad with it too many times anyway, but, you know, just wasn't careful enough. But interesting thing about the employers, I hope one of these days it'll be interesting to see what happens when they get another blind person, if they ever get another blind person where I'm working, which would be interesting to replace me, I guess I should say, because I hope to get out of that job I'm in right now, because I'm doing ACD work for customer service right now, and I've been doing it for 6 years, and I'm ready to think about something else. But, you know, it's an interesting, you're right about each one's case being different. Every blind person I talk to, they approach even the computer use different ways.
And, sure.
It'll be interesting to see it would be kind of interesting to see what someone else would do, how someone else would do my job.
What do you do?
So, I take carpet orders. We are connecting to the mainframe. It's an AS400, really. They don't call it a mainframe, I guess, now.
So you're working in a DOS environment?
Oh, no. I'm Windows 98 and using JFW, and have a Navigator 80 and started out in the DOS environment. Back in 1994, I started working at the company in Boston that got bought out. World Carpets was later bought by Mohawk Industries. But
so you're saying like the old Irma 5250s and
well,
that kind of thing?
You know, they bought that thing for me, but and here's the thing. This is the weird part about it. They bought the Irma board. They bought the latest, greatest software for the... it was a 3270 type thing. You know, they bought the Irma software and the board and everything.
So it was 3270 back then.
Yeah, back in those days, that's what they used.
So you should have used Avatar, which was probably...
I hadn't finished the story.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. We ended up using... What happened was that we... they got the rehab engineer got to the site and started working on the thing, and I wanted to use ASAP. Well, he didn't like ASAP. It wasn't configurable enough for his tastes, so we switched to JAWS for DOS, which I still refuse to use except as a curiosity. But
I don't blame it.
Thing locked my system up all the time. Ugh, anyway, but ASAP... Or no, JAWS didn't want to work with the terminal software. So he found an old Avatar board and put it in and worked fine. And but he thought I would use the Braille. He thought I would use the speech macros. He wrote all these macros to get the thing to read sizes of rolls of carpet, like 0.5 feet, 0.3 inches. 23 feet, 0.4 inches.
That sounds like a dick talk with hyperinflection going.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of what it was. It was a deck talk PC. I still have the old board. The thing's about as long as my desk here, but anyway. But had the Avatar board, you know, it worked fine, but I used the Braille display way more than he thought I would. Because they, when this company decided to hire me, they didn't really spare any expense for the time. They bought a 486, 8 megs of RAM, and they bought the Navigator 80. And
wow.
They bought the DeckTalk PC. They didn't question the expense or anything.
You know that Navigator set them back about $13,000.
Oh, yeah. At least 10 or 11 anyway. I don't know. 94, circa 94, whenever that happened. But it was very interesting. The... basically, I didn't get the job from placement or anything. It just so happened that I knew the family that owned the company, and one of them had enough faith in me to say, hey, this guy could do this customer service job. And so basically he went in there and said, we're going to hire this guy, and you know, if you don't like it, that's tough. And they did.
Well, see, right there, you're basically... agreeing with my point as well about the education. You know, that person knew you well enough or believed in you well enough, had seen your abilities, to say, hey, you know, let's take a chance. And sometimes, you know, in the voc rehab field, I saw where they would have to try before they buy. You know, they would,
yeah.
You know, you'd go in and you'd say, okay, well, we'll subsidize the income for 3 months.
Yeah.
And some blind people get really offended, you know. Why are you going to have to subsidize? Don't they believe in me as a person? You have to level with them and say, no, they don't, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, but you're in. And, you know, and once you're in, you know, you've got an opportunity to prove yourself just like anybody else. The only difference is that we're paying your salary. They're not, but you're still in the same three-month period, probationary period, everybody else is. So get in there. Stop worrying about who's paying you and start worrying about doing your job. And, you know, that's the thing, is that getting across that we don't require special treatment.
Yeah.
We require different treatment in certain areas, but they also are kind of up to the person that configures the job. I sit through a training. When I have a new person that's going to work, I sit through the entire training with them from day one. I mean, by the time I finish, I could do that job.
Yeah.
You know, and that's important, because then, you know, every time for every blind person, it's different. And every time, even if I got the same blind person working in the same company, I sit through the training with them again.
Yeah.
You know, with the next person, because that guy may handle it a little different.
Oh, yeah. And too, the same, the interesting thing, though, about the using JAWS for DOS, I later fired Hunter Joyce on that round because I got tired of the system lockups and things. And the, I mean, it's not to say that JAWS isn't a good program. There are things that it did that ASAP, you know, frankly, doesn't do as well. And, you know, menu, macros, there were a lot of flexible things you could do.
Well, that's always been Henry Joyce's issue, that they've been so darn flexible, but you need to learn. I mean,
but you've got to get in there and learn that macro blank. But with the thing was, with the Braille display, I used the Braille display far more than I ever did the speech, because the Braille display was so much faster to look at roll sizes. The particular rehab engineer really, he heard that they did a study up in North Carolina where they had some blind people that worked some with speech and some with a Braille display in a reservations type setting, and the people with Braille display didn't do as well. But I think, again, that's the, you know, it depends on the job. The Braille display in my case worked so much better because I had these lists of numbers, roll numbers, dial-out numbers.
It depends. I use them both. I when I can, when it's in the budget, I
that's
put them,
that, yeah, that's the thing, when it's in the budget. You know?
I put them both in. I don't use 80-cell displays. I use 40s, and I'll tell you, it's worked out in the view that I put them in. The other thing, though, I will say in Henry Joyce's defense with the JAWS, that Irma board, the Irma used to, and the IBM both, they used to take over the keyboard.
They used to have to
remap a lot of keys, and when you got, and what you would get was, you would get dueling applications that would fight for that keyboard handler, and that was a real bear.
So Avatar was a little more friendly then.
It was totally non-keyboard hardware specific. You know, it didn't depend on it. And Avatar had its own programming language built in, so
it's,
you could write
a funny language though. You had to, as I recall it, most of it was done with F keys.
You could freehand it. It was just a lot easier to do it with the function keys, because the function keys, it was like an auto-generated. Did you ever work with the Avatar, Jonathan?
Oh, yeah. The only thing I used it for was as a kind of an emulation option in terminal packages like Procom and that sort of thing. And certain things I would access would require its use.
Yeah, it was weird. It was all very, very very basic-ish type of programming, like if then else.
Oh yeah, it reminded me a lot of basic.
But you would put these things in, like it would say you put in if by hitting F1, and then you do an open quote and type in the condition, and then you'd hit the F2 key for the then, and then, you know, it was very bizarre.
Unfortunately, I've got a statement here which is sort of relevant, which is that if we don't move on, then we'll run out of time. So I'll have to say thank you very much for phoning in, and we're speaking with Mike Calvo on ACB Radio Mainstream, and we have another call already, so we'll take that. Good evening to you.
And good evening, Michael and Jonathan. Dan Kaiser from Sacramento.
Oh boy!
Oh my gosh!
Hey, great.
Oh, Dan, is that really you? Oh my gosh! I love your show.
Well, thank you. I didn't meet that babe at the convention.
No, you just didn't see her.
I wasn't looking. Yeah. Hey, you guys are on a good topic of employment, because one of the things, I think it takes guts to get a job. I think that's the clue for a blind people. If you got guts and chutzpah and cojones and all that good stuff, I think that you can do it, especially with full unemployment. I mean, full employment. Almost full unemployment with the blind, but not quite. I went and actually conned my one of my bosses, not my current one. I say that over the air, I'll get fired. I conned my former boss, where I worked at AAA. I said, hey, buddy, could you give me a try? Could you just give me a chance? And I didn't feel like I was begging. I just said, could you just give me a chance? And he did. And, of course, I took the switchboard training course at the Lighthouse for the Blind in San Francisco when they had one. And, of course, I didn't know that particular board, so the boss walks up and goes, okay, girls, show him, check him out, see if he knows how to do it. And he laughed. I said, hey, could you guys show me how to run this board? And, I had a job there for 8 years. So I don't know. Maybe it was when I pulled a gun on him and ordered him to hire me. I don't know. Maybe that had something to do with it.
Could have been. A blind man with a gun is kind of crazy.
That's scary. That's scary.
Did you have any problems with the displays or anything like the messages or?
It was a ROLMES ROLMES switchboard, so it worked on the. Each time you heard a beep beep come in, you knew that was the first line, and then the next one down, there was another caller, and then it went up to about 18 calls you could get at one time. So it got kind of hairy when the whole board would fill up.
It must be very difficult, you see, because all of us on this conversation, Mike, Dan, and myself, I guess we're reasonably, you know, not backward in coming forward. I mean, it must be tough for people who feel uncomfortable in those situations. I mean, Dan's story reminds me of a situation where I was in a position of needing to find work, and was at a ceremony, at a function, where the chief executive of a very major company that I was interested in this country was speaking, and I just went up to him afterwards and let him know that I felt that he needed me. And, you know, this guy is because of his position, multi-billion dollar company, very difficult to get to. And I said, you know, could you spare me 20 minutes in your office for me to explain why? And I got my appointment. Now, you know, nothing came of it, but he gave it a good shot to find something suitable. And so sometimes you just have to do something a bit extraordinary like that to get noticed.
Yeah, but that sucker only paid you minimum wage. No. Just kidding.
Well, the thing is, you know, the thing is, too, that hey, as, you know, sighted people go out there and look for jobs forever and a day, you know, I mean, they sometimes, it's just easy, you know, at very minimum, the most frustrating point to me was I was never going to be able to go get a job at Burger King, even if I needed to feed my family cutting lettuce, because they'd be concerned that their insurance wouldn't cover a blind guy cutting lettuce in the back of the place. And that, you know, and that's a legitimate concern, and that's a very scary one.
Well, you know, Carl's Jr. Hires a lot of blind people. I may not agree with Mr. Carter's politics, but he does hire blind people in his restaurants. I worked at one of his restaurants, and I also worked at McDonald's. McDonald's has hired blind people.
Really?
I think, yeah, they do. I was a general crew person, dressed sandwiches. I dressed the hamburger sandwiches and ran a deep fryer and, you know, and then at Carl's.
I said, that's why you got those blisters on your finger.
That's it. That's
well,
it.
My
I'm
mouth is
around.
Watering here, guys.
You what?
My mouth is watering
What's
here.
What's that, Jonathan?
His mouth is watering. He said,
oh, yeah, I'm bobbing for those fruit pies. But, you know, yeah, it is, and we don't know, you know, sitting here, us three, how, what the challenges are necessarily for someone who's newly blinded or hasn't been blind. Although I will tell you, it seems like the newly blinded folks I've seen out there seem to be adjusting quicker in the computer age than they did before, because maybe they were good on the computer before or something, but some of the folks I've seen who are newly blinded, who are young anyway, who have the computer keyboard down, really are amazing to me.
Yeah, I've seen that as well, even back when I was doing placement. I worked with a lot of newly blinded people. After I got involved with the government, I started getting a lot of calls from private companies and insurance companies that would have a person that was recently blinded. And instead of retiring them or whatever, they were trying to figure it out. And I was amazed at how quick and also how much support the newly blinded person would get from the company. You know, and also I would notice that that company would come back and hire more blind people just based on the interaction. Maybe it was that the blind person was working with a blind trainer. I don't know. But that was my experience. I think that the best advice is just educate. Don't get frustrated. Frustration is going to get you nowhere. Anger is going to get you nowhere. Been there, done that.
Yeah, you know, but the real hard obstacle here is the fact that we have to go through hoops with the vocational rehab. And
this is true.
And this is the real hard part that really irritates me. And California happens to be 48th in the United States with competitive job placements, and I don't know if we're behind one of the territories or not, but it's just really frustrating. A lot of the rehab counselors, they give you a generalist who absolutely does not know, and the generalist will tell you, and you made this comment earlier, Mike, that you'd be real surprised if a rehab person ever told you they didn't think you could do it. Well, I'm a lobbyist here for the CCD, and my rehab counselor told me he didn't think I could do it. And here I had three bills signed into law.
Rather so encouraging, wouldn't you say?
What's that?
I said rather encouraging, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's rather, you know, and I think a lot of us who know what we want to do, and it may not have anything to do with how long you've been blind, but it may have, in fact, more to do with how well you know a particular skill or how much you're excited about doing something. And I think the excitement helps, too. You know, I think just being excited and having a skill and taking that excitement and turning it around into your skill. How many people get jobs through rehab and how many people get jobs through their own means? And I suspect the majority do not get jobs through rehab.
I would think that a blind person, you know, we just need to get our networking skills up and really network. That's why I get excited about the computer, because I know that we can communicate. We can communicate between one another. And let me tell you, if you're working in a national company, then you probably have a connection somewhere that somebody over here may know somebody over there and say, hey, you know, we've got a blind person working in California. For example, in Ryder Trucks is a good example. There's a blind person here in Miami. Well, now Ryder Trucks in
he's
Colorado.
Driving
huh?
He's driving trucks.
Okay. Yeah, right. Yeah, we've tried to put him out there in a truck. The insurance wouldn't cover him. But you know, now they're looking at hiring some blind people in Colorado. So it's a networking thing. You know, blind people just need to get out there and knock on doors, and don't wait for the rehab agency to do it for you. You know, because these people are overpaid, underpaid, overworked. You know, at least here in Florida, they got 150 people on a caseload, man. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I was more impressed with what the Small Business Administration does for blind people, or for anybody. My wife and I were going to open up a restaurant in Eureka area, which is up by the California border. And they really made us go through a lot of, you know, let's research your competition. You tell me how you do this job. You tell me exactly what tools you need. How are you going to hire people? They make you go through a big process, and rehab doesn't have a clue, at least here in California, how to do any of that. And I often, you know, I kind of resent the fact that your average case in California who gets successfully employed costs the government $85,000. You know, if you would just give me the friggin' $85,000, I could have done something with it.
Yeah. Well, it's you know, it's just that, you know, they try and, at least for a while, they try to put a cookie cutter approach on it. You know, send them to this and send them to, you know, it's kind of like going through an obstacle course when you first got on. Okay, we'll put them through here and put them through there, and 6 months down the road, I'll have to pay attention to them. You know, and that's just because the counselors, again, here in Florida, they get paid $18,000 a year entry level.
Goodness me.
And I think at the pinnacle of their career, you know, they get 22, 23, and they get 150 clients, 160 clients on a caseload. You can't do that. And they don't, you know, they give them to them by age or whatever, not the client. You know, you may have a guy who's great at job placement, and he gets put with the old people, you know, with the people that are in their, you know, in their 50s and their 60s, and that's not the people you need to get jobs for.
Yeah,
I think you know, maybe something, you know, I don't know, a listserv for blind job opportunities or whatever would be a kind of an interesting thing. I think that partnerships are really good with business and the government, and I think commissions for the blind probably need to partnership with large companies. I mean, if I were a rehab counselor and I worked for a rehab agency, I'd want the agency to tell me, hey, the more clients you get, the more pay you're going to get. You get me these clients. So then I'll be sitting there going, okay, I can sit there and I'll call this big teleservice rep company and say, you need teleservice reps? I've got 80 for you. And, you know, that's the approach I think they need to do.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Mr. Kaiser. I've got to move it along, and I appreciate you giving us a call.
No problem.
Okay. See you later. This is ACB Radio Mainstream. If you're listening to this live, that's here on Blind Line between 9 and 11 Eastern, 6 to 8 Pacific, 1 to 3 GMT on Wednesday night, Thursday morning. Well, you can give us a call if you wish, courtesy of the good folks at spiderphone.com who donate these facilities to us. The number is 212-812-2800. That's a US number in New York, 212-812-2800, and then enter the PIN 1083-4173. My guest on Blind Line today is Mike Calloway of the radio webcaster, which we have not yet talked about. Let's do that. Mike, what is the radio webcaster for those who haven't heard of it before?
Well, the radio webcaster is a product that transmits audio from any PC to any FM radio. How many people have been listening to ACB radio in their office or in their home office or in their bedroom or whatever and have wanted to take ACB radio with them to another part of the house or to wash dishes or even out on the back porch, and you just don't have a way of plugging up your computer out there? Well, that's basically how radio webcaster functions. You receive a transmitter that you connect to the back of your PC. You tune it to a blank radio station or an empty radio station on the FM band, and you're ready to go. Now, it's not just a transmitter. It also comes with a remote control and a neat little piece of software that allows you to access a couple thousand different radio stations online just by simply pushing buttons on the remote control. And that remote control will work. It works on radio frequencies, so it works basically the same distance as the transmitter does. So you can sit in the back porch or whatever and actually change stations on your computer and never have to go near the thing and listen to your little FM radio out on the back porch or while you're gardening or whatever on your Walkman and interact with your computer via remote control. Mention the fact that the remote control, of course, will work with, any of a number of your home devices, including your lights and your telephones and your DVD players and all that kind of stuff.
Very cool. Let's come back and talk some more about that. But area code 253, we have a call from you. Good evening.
Yeah, hi, Jonathan. This is Mickey Quinzer.
Hi, Mickey.
Hey, Mickey.
Hey, how you guys doing?
I
have to give a plug for a radio webcaster because I use it all the time. It is really nice to be able to, I was out on the patio with the dogs for a while, and then I came in here, and now I'm calling you guys. And it allows us, you get a lot more freedom because you don't have to sit near a computer. You can actually walk around your house and get some exercise, and it's great. Not to mention the fact that it's really reliable. I don't think I've ever turned mine off except for when I moved to my new house. Just leave it on because I forget all about it, but it doesn't care.
It's very good, isn't it? And I actually just recently got one of these, and one of the things that is pretty good about it, and this is not an infomercial, but I wouldn't say it if I didn't believe it, one of the things that's good about it is that it's so easy to set up compared to... I'm losing my microphone. Compared to some of the other ones. For instance, you've got this easy tuning knob to select the frequency, whereas a lot of these things you need to fiddle around with a screw and things like that, and the remote's a nice feature. It's very blind friendly, and what really amazed me was that obviously the company knew I was a blind person. I got a Braille manual with mine.
Yeah, we do give a Braille manual. I'll tell you something funny about this whole thing. The radio webcaster came to pass because I work online, and working online, I spent many many hours in front of the computer. Then, as I got onto this PC audio list and things of that nature, I started hearing about all these other neat things I could hear on the computer, and I got my hands on EarthTuner, and it was through. And I mean, here I was, 1,500 stations, man, I was going nuts. So I would spend 3 and 4 hours a night just sitting in front of my computer. I wouldn't get to bed till 1 o'clock in the morning. My wife was telling me that she was going to move out of the house and just move the computer into the bedroom and I could sleep with it. And my business partner, he built a transmitter for me, which was not the design that the radio webcaster has now. He further enhanced it after we started looking at it from a consumer perspective. And he built this, and he said, now when your wife is watching television or whatever, set your computer wherever you want, and go put on your Walkman or whatever, and go hang out with her in the living room. And one day, money was really tight, and this is, and Jonathan, you know this to be the truth. You know I told you this story, and Mickey, you know this is true too, because I've told you as well.
Uh-huh.
I'm sitting here on my back porch, money was tight, didn't know what I was going to do, and I said, you know, what am I going to do? And I just, it was just impressed upon me that I should sell this thing, sell this transmitter. And I sat down and I created the radio webcaster concept, wrote it out in an email, and just sent it out to see what would happen. The beauty of the Internet, that's the beauty of the Internet. And I knew that we could build them in a relatively short amount of time. So I said, well, if it sells, you know, great. I shot off an email to the writer of Earth Tuner, told him my idea, said, would you mind if I bundled it? We'll write our own software later, but right now, do you mind if we bundle yours? He said, no, not a problem. So sent it out to about four different mailing lists, woke up the next morning, and I had 40 orders in my email for it. And here's this product that was still in the drawing board, basically. Wrote everybody, told them that, you know, that they would be ready. 2 weeks later, we shipped out all our radio webcasters, and radio webcasters started getting noticed by the media from all over the place. We've been in Yahoo, we've been in Internet Life Yahoo Internet Life magazine. CNN called us one of the flagship products for the millennium. And I mean, this is a product that was developed. It was not developed for the blind community, which is the funny thing. But the blind community has just adopted it and called it its own. And
right.
Hence, this is why we've put together a Braille manual. And the software is still not as accessible as I would like it to be. As a matter of fact, it's quite inaccessible, to be quite honest with you. You need the remote to work with the software. But the whole idea behind the whole thing is to be able to use it away from the computer and being able to use it, you know, and the remote control, the software actually, as it receives information from the remote control, talks to you through the speaker or through the radio that you're listening to and tells you exactly what you're doing. So it's kind of, I mean, I love the product. I use the product. I'm hooked on my own darn product. I think it's cool.
Did you have a question for Mike, by the way, Mickey, while you're on the line here?
Yeah, I actually do. Is there yet an update?
There is an update. We are doing a couple of things. One of the things that we're stumped right now with a database issue. Our next update will be give you the ability to add your own URLs to the database. But it's going to be, it's not just going to be a, no pun intended, a blind edition. It will actually go out and test the URL and
okay.
make sure that it's a good stream, and it will pull as much information from that stream as it can, meaning, you know, the city, the state, the type of thing, and put it in a genre.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can do searches by genre, you can do searches by radio station name, that kind of thing. And we figured it was going to be very easy, and you know, unfortunately in programming, once you get started on something, you better finish it. And that's the problem that we're at right now. We're feverishly trying to get it done, because we've been saying for weeks that it's coming out, it's coming out, it's coming out, and I'm just repeating what the programmers are telling me.
Yeah, that's part of the problem, you know, when you've got other people working on it. I mean, I think probably the most frustrating part about this kind of stuff is sitting back and waiting for other people to get things done. You know, I kind of do the same thing in my line of work, and so I know where you're coming from there.
I'm a big advocate, as both you guys know, of the Internet. I'm a person who believes that the Internet is a must-have, it's a need, not a want, not a luxury for a blind person to have access to the Internet in their everyday life. I am a very big advocate of that, and I think that both of you would agree. Due to Mickey, where you work, and Jonathan, with the work and some of the conversations you and I have had, that a blind person must If obviously, if you're hearing this program, you're on the internet. But if you have friends that are not on the internet, please encourage them. This is the internet is only going to grow and only going to narrow the gap even more.
Then I have one last question. Have you been able to create a database entry for Livestream America, or for the different ACB radio streams?
At this time, Mickey, we're only handling Windows Media.
Uh-huh.
I've been speaking to those at ACB Radio, trying to see if it would be possible for them to get on Windows Media format. And at this point, although the Windows Media tools are free, the bandwidth required to serve up the Windows Media, from what I understand, would be a pretty heavy expense for them. So the answer, in short, is no. In the long term, we're looking at incorporating other streaming decoding methods into the product. We didn't incorporate the Reel plugin at the beginning because Reel basically refuses to be under the same roof as Microsoft. And although that is not the way that Microsoft feels about it, that is the way that Reel says, if we're not the only show on the computer in that software, then we won't play ball. And that's exactly, and that is true. According to all their documentation, if you program for Reel, you must sign to the fact that you will not work for Windows Media.
Well, I don't know whether you guys have had a chance to try, but I know that Windows Media 7 has just come out in its official version, and I haven't been able to check yet to see whether that new Windows Media Player and its accompanying ActiveX control now properly supports MP3 streams like ACB Radio. So with a bit of luck, maybe it does, I don't know.
That would be wonderful, because for us it would be, I would assume, and I need to be careful when I say that, I would assume it's going to be very simple for us to upgrade from one to the other. And if that's the case, then we will have an immediate access to, Live 365 is 13,000 stations,
yep.
Right? And 15 listeners? No, I'm kidding.
And they're all listening to ACB Radio.
That's right. The one thing I'll say is, in all honesty, is that when you get the transmitter, the software is like second, and maybe even third in line, because when it comes right down to it, I use that transmitter for everything. You know, I'm using it for my PC. Sometimes I want to listen to the old-fashioned talking book records, so I plug it in that. Sometimes I want to, I've even had a time where we were wanting to listen to the audio from our television outside, so I plugged it in there. So, the FM transmitter part of, that's actually, you could sell that thing standalone.
No, we do. We do sell it at www.radiowebcaster.com. Sorry, Jonathan, had to do it. and you can buy the transmitter alone for $99, or you can buy, for $149, you can buy the package. Mickey, do you have your website up?
I have to have you send me the information so I can put it back up again. Yeah, I've got a website that I'm creating, and it's called almost-magic.com. And the reason for that is that that's how I feel about computers, is that they're magic. And, the two jobs that I've had are basically giving access to visually impaired people to information, and it's all been real magic, So anyway, I have a website that I'm playing with.
You're just a magical guy.
Oh, isn't he? And what are you doing on there, Mickey? What are you doing with that site?
Well, right now, I'm just collecting really interesting links, trying to categorize them, so I've got links for people if they want to get games from, accessible games. People, if you want to get, I've got a little section on Microsoft. I've got a little section on screen access links. And don't have any e-commerce yet. I don't know whether I want to do that. I kind of do, because I'd like to, it's costing me, it's costing me money each month to do this thing, and I really probably should make it pay.
That is the trouble. I mean, that's the trouble with heretoday.com, which I've tried to keep current. But when I started that, I was making a living not working for myself. And now the challenge is how to make it pay its way and justify my time, you know, when I could be working on business projects that do pay.
Well, I have a similar problem with my FTP. I run an OTR, an old-time radio and radio mystery theater, and, you know, I mean, just any kind of audio dramatization type of FTP, and the bandwidth, just the bandwidth. Folks don't realize, you know, the cost. I have a full T1 in here, costs almost $500 a month.
Yeah.
For the OT, not just for the OTR site, but, you know, for that and other things that I do here, and it's a, you know, it's great when you can find a blind person. I think it's that people haven't put anything up yet to buy, because if I know that a blind person is selling stuff on their website, and they're also giving to the community, such as you guys are, I'm certainly going to freak it if for no other reason, just based on principle.
Yeah, I do the same thing. You know, in fact, one of the links on my site is Dennis Godin, who worked for Henry Joyce. He works with Dennis Brown, you know, on JFW scripts and stuff. Anyway, I've got a link to his website and stuff. So anyway, I'll let you guys go. I just kind of wanted to get on there and then say hi, because basically, you know, it's really... You know, we're kind of, all of us are kind of in different ways. We're all pioneers, and you know, we don't know where all this is gonna go. But you know, we just have to enjoy it. We just have to just kind of get as much as we can out of it and enjoy it.
Good on you, Mickey. Thank you very much for phoning in.
Sure.
Okay, bye now. This is Blind Line on ACB Radio. Jonathan Mosen. My guest is Mike Calvo. If you want to call us, the number is 212-812-2800. That's in the United States. We're live from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, 6 to 8 Pacific, and 1 to 3 GMT. 1-212-812-2800, and the PIN that you have to enter is 1-0-8-3-4-1-7-3. That PIN, courtesy of spiderphone.com, 1-0-8-3-4-1-7-3. We have another call on the line. Hello.
Hello, Jonathan. This is Richard.
Hi, Richard. How are you?
Very good. Hello, Michael. How you doing?
Hey, Richard. How are you? Richard, can you turn down your radio? It's echoing like mad.
He's on dial pad or something.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. I don't have headphones, so that's the problem.
Oh.
He's ringing
that's
the cheap
problem.
Way.
I don't have headphones, so you may be hearing my speakers.
Gotcha.
I guess what I wanted to ask you about, because I know you mentioned it one time, I have the iTouch keyboard, wireless keyboard, and you did say some people were able to somehow be able to use that with the radio webcaster, and I haven't been able to really quite figure it out. I was just wondering what people have actually been able to do with it.
I really,
as far as accessing the software.
I really am not familiar enough with that keyboard to answer that question. I've seen people, I believe, Richard, that people, what they're doing is they're using the radio webcaster transmitter and just using the keyboard to run their computer.
That's right. That's what I do.
Yeah, not regular, not using it with the radio webcaster software.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought you were referring to when you had mentioned that. That one time. I think it was the other interview that Jonathan had done with you.
Yeah, essentially what you've got is a semi-portable computer, because you can take your laptop, you can take your keyboard anywhere with you and have full control over your computer. So that means you're not just able to listen to the radio stations on the radio webcaster, but for example you can take your cordless keyboard out on the porch on a sunny day and do your word processing, your email or anything, and hear the results coming through software speech on the radio webcaster.
Yeah, right. It's a great keyboard. I like it.
Yes.
Once I was finally able to get it to work with JAWS properly.
Just make sure you go into the configuration manager, into the default configuration, and turn standard keyboard processing on.
Right. Well, I guess what I found out is that my father was trying to be helpful, so he hooked up the keyboard and everything before, because I wanted to do it with my old keyboard, change that setting. So I think that's part of what my problem was. I tried to change that setting after I had had the keyboard going, so I think that was my problem.
Excellent. Oh, very good of you to call in, and we'll catch up with you next time.
I just want to make one comment, though. I guess, you know, as far as employment and all.
Sure.
I guess if you know, from my email and all, that I do belong to an organization that's involved with doing disabled certifying instructors for dealing with the disabled. And when I found out through some friends of mine when I've gone to our conferences that there are some people on the board that I've been told that wouldn't even sit down with me because they're not comfortable in dealing with me. And that's the problem is if you do not know that, you have no way of knowing that from other people who tell you, then you don't know what you're dealing with. And that's part of the problem, too, as far as the education goes.
Do you have any comment on that, Mike?
Well, when you say that wouldn't want to deal with you, you mean people in the same organization, or you mean people that what do you mean? A little lost there.
The same, what I mean is the same organization. In other words, the people that are at the decision-making level that, you know, are actually on the board of directors that,
I would be forced to say that those people, if the organization is developed to facilitate or instruct other handicapped people, I would venture to say that is a person. See, my definition of an ignorant person is a person who really doesn't know. My definition of a stupid person is a person that doesn't know and really hasn't and knows where they can learn, but really hasn't bothered to learn. So I guess that I would venture to say that anyone who's working on the board of directors for an organization that's supposed to help handicapped people and isn't willing to give another handicapped person a shot at something due to the lack of ignorance of what that person is capable of is stupid, not ignorant. That's just my opinion.
Yes, well, you know, tell us what you really think. Got to move on, Richard, because we're way over time, so I appreciate you giving us a call. You're listening to ACB Radio. We're speaking with Mike Calvo from the radio webcaster. Mike, you mentioned before we had that influx of calls that your remote that comes with it can control other appliances besides the radio webcaster. Can you explain that a bit more?
Sure. The remote that comes with the radio webcaster is an X10 remote. X10 is a protocol that is used to automate functions in the home wirelessly, whether it be turning lights on and off or turning on and off different appliances, your coffee makers and this and that. So the radio webcaster remote is developed by the X10 people, and what they've done is they've put all the best of all these worlds in one little package. And it's an RF remote, which means that it communicates back to the computer via radio signal, so that works through walls. It's got an IR interface, which is an infrared interface, so it will communicate as well with your television or any IR device like a DVD player or a stereo system. I mean, the book is like packed full of things that it can run. And it'll work, it'll send out signals to X10 devices, which then communicate with one another via the electricity wiring in your house. So these people have, the remote itself is just an amazing piece of work. And there's buttons on the remote so you can turn all the lights on your house if you're wired up. You can turn them all on, you can turn them all off, and, you know, you can have it. There's an X10 device for your phone. There's software that you can get that will allow you to even customize the remote for other applications. We're about to start including that with Radio Webcaster, so you can customize that remote for Real Player and for Winamp and things like that. So you'll be able to enjoy some of the features. You won't be able to enjoy the talking, of course, of the remote control, the way that it talks with the Radio Webcaster software, but you will be able to create macro keys through other pieces of software that will work with this and control other software packages besides being able to turn on your television and your DVD and all that stuff.
And so can you train the remote at the moment? Can you train it to understand other remote controls in your house so that you can have this one remote controlling your TV and your video and it knows the signals to send out?
Sure. As a matter of fact, I have mine in the living room, and when I get quite bored, I turn off the television with the remote. I turn off the satellite receiver with the remote. I turn on the stereo system with the remote. I set it to the radio with the remote, and then I hit the PC button with the remote to communicate with my computer in the other room and begin a radio webcaster session.
Man.
All with one remote that sits on my coffee table.
You are one high-tech guy.
Yeah, right. It took my wife a month to learn how to use it.
Hey, that's good. That means that you get to watch all your favorite programs.
Yeah, right. So my poor wife, when we got married, my wife decided when we got married, she would freak out because everything in the house would talk.
Yeah.
And when I wasn't home, she would be scared because she didn't know what was going to talk at her next.
So, what does it take to make your house X10 capable? You know, so that you can control devices that don't necessarily have an infrared remote sensor on them.
Oh gosh, getting the what the X10 devices are is they're little receivers. They come in several different shapes and sizes, and they come in the way of a module that you can, for example, you can take a lamp and plug this lamp into this module and then plug the module into the wall and assign it what they call a code, a house code. And then you can control this module from the radio webcaster remote and turn your lights on and off. Or you can actually, if you're a little more handy than that, you can replace the actual wall plug with an X10-enabled wall plug and set that to a house code. Or you can change those switches in the walls to an X10 remote. There's wild things you can do with X10. There's an X10 device that'll go on your computer, and you can spy on your house from anywhere in the world.
Yeah,
you
man.
Know, and
I have friends who absolutely, completely, you know, moved out for 3 months and X10'd their house. You know, put all the cabling everywhere in the walls, so that when you go and stay with them, you get a remote control. And the remote control can control any function that you or they determine that it should control, right through from the, you know, the garage door to the lights to the extractor fan in the ensuite bathroom.
I had a friend. This is the macro. This is his "I'm coming home" macro, he called it. And what it would do was he had a 900 megahertz transmitter in his car, okay, that would be hooked up to his computer. And when he got down the street from his house, the transmitter would trigger a remote and would trigger a macro on his computer that would send out X10 signals. It would turn the lights on at 80% in one part of the house and 100% in the other. It would open the garage door. It would turn the answering machine off. It would start coffee. It would lower the temperature on his jacuzzi. You know, all in one shot. And when he got home and disarmed the alarm, it would welcome him home via voice. It was crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I mean, we're talking, you know, crazy amounts of programming set up. Hey, man, if you're, you know, some people have boats, some people have golf, some, you know.
Bill Gates, eat your heart out. That's pretty cool. So you can start.
That technology has been here. I laugh when they talk about, this technology is going to be here one day. And that technology has been here for years.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. So the radio webcaster can get you started. So can you explain the process for those who haven't used one? What do you do with this remote to communicate with the radio webcaster?
Simply push buttons on it. And if you have a set of stations, there's two lists of stations in the radio webcaster. It comes with one, and you create the other. The regular station database is a huge database of radio stations. As a matter of fact, in the release that we're doing now in the next couple days, God willing, we will be incorporating 40 channels of on-demand radio reading service audio for our blind users that you'll be able to punch up things such as the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the LA Times, several different audio drama programs and things like that, all on demand, just by punching in a channel number. And if you like that particular channel, you would save it to a favorite so that you don't have to punch this long four-digit number. We can handle up to 9,999 channels or presets, and then we can do what are called what we call virtual transponders, which would actually break it down into 9,999 channels per transponder, and we can have up to 9,999 transponders, which we'll never get to. But you know, the use of it is very simple. If you know how to use a telephone, you can use the radio webcaster. We are gearing up for, although the radio webcaster is a very easy product to use, there are some blind people that are not on the internet yet because they have to learn a computer and learn the speech and learn all the different affiliated things. And even though companies like ProductivityWorks and IBM with their homepage reader have come out with products that kind of blend both worlds of speech and web accessibility, there's still a bit of a learning curve there just to how to get into Windows and so on and so forth. Wouldn't it be so much easier if we could just talk to something? You know, and it would take us where we wanted to go on the internet.
So tell me a bit more about those future plans. So what you are able to tell me about them?
Yeah. Well, we're working on a project to put a computer or a web accessing device, an internet device, in the home of every blind person that wants one, free of charge. This is a rather large task, as you can imagine. But with the help of many people, many large organizations that we've talked to, that I'm not at liberty to go into right now, we have set up agreements to be able to put together a web device that you will be able to talk to it. You'll get this box that plugs into your phone line and plugs into your wall. And you turn it on, and it says, "Hi, where do you want to go today on the internet?" And you tell it, "I want to hear ACB radio." And it will turn on ACB radio. You tell it, "I want to go to www.amazon.com." And it will go to www.amazon.com, and it will read you the web page. And if you want to go to the next link, you tell it, "Next link." And it'll go to the next link. And if you want it to go to the previous link, it'll go to the previous link. And if you want to buy the book you're listening to, you tell it, "Let's buy this," you know, that kind of thing. And it will go ahead and fill out the form for you and put in all your information. My goal as a blind person, as I said earlier, is that the computer is not a want-to-have, it's a got-to-have in the life of a blind person. Imagine, Jonathan, the ability, just what a freedom it would be for a blind person to be able to take a shirt and put it on top of a scanner, which costs $50 today, okay, or less, and that
system here.
Welcome to spiderphone.com.
Okay. This is how you... It doesn't seem to be understanding me. How rude.
If you have a conference code, please enter it.
Okay, it's not hearing me. This is a jolly nuisance because we were having a great talk to Mike Cover, but just hang on there and we'll try and get him back. You're listening to ACB Radio Mainstream. I'm Jonathan Mosen, and this is the Blind Line Show, where every week we speak with a whole range of interesting people, including people who phone in about blindness related issues. Let's just have a look while we're trying to reestablish connection with Mike Calvo about what's coming up on ACB Radio Mainstream tomorrow, because of course we're here with 10 hours of unique programming every week, and hopefully that 10 hours will soon expand. We're going to be at 9 o'clock Eastern Time tomorrow, be hearing from Brian Hartgen. He has the InfoTech program, and I'm not quite sure what he's got for us tomorrow, but he will have something very interesting, because he always does, InfoTech features reviews of all kinds of technology. He's been dealing with a couple of the Daisy players in recent times. And, oh gosh, I do believe that Delta 3 is having one of its bad hair days. But we'll just try again just in case. So Brian Hartgen will be able to fill us in on what's happening with InfoTech tomorrow. He's actually going to be our guest on next week's Blind Line, by the way. Should have some interesting things to talk to us about from the UK, because this week they are having their Site Village exhibition. This is a pretty major... I guess it's like the CSUN equivalent of the UK.
Welcome to spiderphone.com.
Okay, let me just see if we can get in here.
To see who's talking
okay.
on this call with your
just
website,
hang on.
Go to www.spiderphone.com. Thank you. You will now join your conference.
And that's how it works. Mike Calvo, the internet blew up on me, but we are back with you.
I see that. Good. I'm glad you're back.
Oh, man, I'm glad to be back, man. I've been padding here, padding furiously. So we're going to finish this anecdotal stuff about the shirt and the $50 scanner, if it kills us.
Anyway, imagine being able to do that, to put your shirt on the scanner and it saying you were wearing a blue shirt. But the biggest problem that a blind person would have, I would venture to say, is not the $50 scanner. It's the $1,000 computer that you would hook the scanner up to.
So this sounds like a pretty exciting thing, you know, give everybody one of these cool PCs to do all these functions. But how are you going to make that pay its way?
Well, it would pay its way with advertising, which actually, in our research, a lot of blind people would like to hear the advertising. Because, I mean, sure, we all know about a lot of things on the Internet, but how many accessible things do we know about on the Internet? How many shopping places that we can effectively traverse do we know about, besides what we eat, one of us tells the other? The industries are finally starting to realize that the blind person, and I don't mean to sound insulting, is homebound. We're not homebound like we can't get out, but I don't know about you, and I'm pretty able to get out and around. Even with my beautiful sighted wife, I can get around and do what I need to do. But if I can get something delivered to my door and not have to have my wife get in a car and drive me there, or get in a cab and go there, then I'm going to probably order it, you know, and bring it to my door, even if it takes me a day or so. There are approximately 12 million users or potential users of a product like this. That's a market, you know, and that's a market that a lot of advertisers want to tap into and market their goods and services to. And the beauty of this project, of this product, is that it will be able to be as difficult or as complex as a person wants to be, meaning if they want to use it as a computer, or it can be as simple as just a device that you use to listen to the newspaper in the morning. And it's all done via speech. You talk to it, and it talks back to you.
Given the socioeconomic status of blind people in general, the high unemployment levels, lower incomes, is the blindness community a market that advertisers think is worth the bother, though?
Well, do you eat?
Sometimes, yes. Have you seen how big my tummy is?
Well, yeah, you didn't look that fat when I saw you over at ATB. we have to talk to your wife about that, see if we can get some meat on them bones, man. But I mean, do you eat? Do you buy dishwashing detergent? Do you buy clothing? Do you buy presents for your children at Christmas time and family members? You know, it's the average, even in the average unemployed household of a blind person, at least $10,000 or $12,000 is spent a year.
Now, we have another call on the line, so we'll let them ask their question. Hello there.
Hi, Jonathan. This is Sam in New York.
How's it going?
Hey, Michael.
Hey.
I just have one quick question concerning the remote of the webcaster. How does the remote of the webcaster actually access the computer?
There is a what we call a dongle that connects to the serial port of the computer, and as the and it is constantly reading a frequency that the remote transmits on, and when you push a button on the remote, it sends a signal to this receiver, and it in turn converts that signal into a signal that the computer understands through its serial port and then interprets.
Okay. That you hadn't quite explained, and that clarifies that. So is it then, seeing as how I live in a major metro, very major metropolitan area here.
In New York?
Yeah.
Oh, we've got Steve Mitsura out there with a radio webcaster.
Yeah.
We got Richard out there, got a radio webcaster. We've got several people.
Well, do you know, the hardest thing to find on the New York FM band is a bit of bit of white noise, yeah.
Yeah. So what I was, my next question was, is the radio webcaster usable without the, I mean, since I mostly hang out in my living room anyway, could I use the remote without the transmitter?
Sure.
Oh, sure. Huh.
Oh, sure. And you'll find, and I would suggest, that you know, we have a very active radio webcaster users list.
Uh-huh.
And you may want to go on there, and if you're interested in the product, asking some pre-purchase questions there of other users, or even looking through the archives. We've kept that policy from day one, where we have an open door for new users, current users, and prospective users to look at what other people are saying, look at what their tips and tricks on using the product are. And there are, you'll find that there are people in your basic area that are using this thing. Are you in an apartment or in a home?
It's an apartment, and since I'm also right between the Vampire State Building, as I like to call it, and the World Trade Center, reception is even worse than it normally would be.
Oh, that's good, actually.
Yeah.
Is that right? In this particular case, that's good, sure, because it'll break through. Because when that happens, you tend to get the strongest signal, the clearest. And if you've got a transmitter right near your computer, right near your radio, guess what you're going to get the clearest? You're going to get your radio webcaster signal. Usually in New York, it's best if you go near the top of the dial or near the bottom of the dial. And the transmitter, one of the things I didn't say was that the product does the transmitter does cover the full spectrum from 88 to 108.
Oh well, yeah, that's very good. But it is possible to buy the package without the transmitter.
Sure.
Yeah.
You can just order the remote and the software. And we don't penalize you for doing that. If you want to add a transmitter later, you can, and you don't. It doesn't cost you anything extra.
Now here's something. Another comment / question. You were talking earlier about the fact that real people, or maybe they're unreal. I don't know what you're saying. That they don't like to coexist with Microsoft. How do you explain Highwire?
Highwire, they are hacking.
Oh, is that it?
They're
hacking. Maybe that's why they haven't come out with a new release.
They're hacking. They're hacking, and listen, that's what LiveWire does too. What they do is they bring up an occurrence of the player, or they hack right at the ActiveX control, and we can do that, and we know how to do that. The problem is that there's a feature that the Real does that nobody else does, and that is Real hogs your audio card. We use the Windows Media components, and we can have several Windows Media Player occurrences going on at a time. And I don't mean to sound too technical, but...
You mean just like Winamp? I mean, just like you can open multiple occurrences?
Correct. But you cannot do that with Real. And Real, and the problem is that Real gets real jealous when anything else is open in its space, if you're not on a multi-channel sound card. Now, on my SB Live, I can open up a Winamp session, and I can open up a real audio session. Boy, is that a trip. But you cannot do it, for example, on a laptop. You can't do it. But you can run the radio webcaster in its full glory on a laptop. Now, you can't have speech running on the laptop when you're running the radio webcaster. You have to put your speech program to sleep.
That depends. My laptop's got a multi-channel sound card and it works fine.
Excuse me, Jonathan?
My laptop has a multi-channel sound card and it works just fine.
Where did you get that?
I think they're available now.
Yeah, it's just, when I say it's a multi-channel sound card, it was a single-channel sound card under Windows 95, but because of the driver for the sound card under 98, it supports multiple wave sessions. And it's
is it a Yamaha?
Yamaha? Yeah.
Offline, we got to talk, because I have the same problem. I'm on 98, and I have a Yamaha driver, and maybe I'm just running the wrong drivers.
I don't know. Yeah.
Boy, that would solve a huge problem for a lot of people. Anyway, but that's the thing, is that, you know, it so that's why we don't use the real. We contacted them, and their licensing is very specific about that. And we, you know, if we have to use underhanded tricks and this and that, it's just a matter of time. When I started in this industry, there was approximately 800 MP3 streaming stations on the internet. There are now over 13,000.
Yeah, that's just on Live365 alone. And when you add in Shoutcast.com and Icecast and BYO Broadcast, I think you'd be looking at 17, 18,000.
Yeah, so you're looking at, and you want to know something, there's only about 7,000 real audio streams.
I was just going to say that I've been under the impression, I've had this gut feeling over the last at least something like 6 months, anyway, that real player people are losing.
Yeah,
I think it's gonna take a while, because
it'll take a while. But what I've noticed is that more and more of the stations that I go to now are real media ones rather than real
Windows media, right?
Yeah, whatever.
Well, you know, the audio is so much better. There's no doubt about that.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
and it's just a better.
Well, G2 isn't bad, but a lot of people either aren't using it, or depending on what your connectivity, real networks has this thing where, depending on the rate that you're getting the stream or something, it changes.
Yep.
Yeah, the Shure stream, yeah. Windows Media has that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're sure to get a stream. Now, you're not sure if it's a good one or a bad one.
Yeah, exactly. But you can notice the difference. I mean, if it suddenly goes down, you know, you'll hear that difference.
Yeah, Windows Media has bandwidth negotiation as well.
Yeah, it does, but it's a lot smoother, I found, at least. In defense of Real, they are supporting the streaming MP3, which is something I don't understand why Microsoft hasn't done.
Yeah, actually, RealPlayer Version 8 is a nice package, to be honest. It does a really nice job of streaming with ACB Radio, for instance.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I've used it here when I don't use Winamp.
Yeah, but a lot of people tell me that they get a lot of breakup with that.
You will. It's more breakup prone, and that's because with Winamp you can adjust the amount of data that it gets before it starts playing the stream, and that means that if there's a little bit of fluctuation, there's enough in memory to keep going. Because you see, MP3 streaming uses the HTTP protocol, which was never designed for streaming audio. It was designed to transmit, you know, little bits of text over the web. So, you know, we're really pushing it to its limits. But it's interesting, you know, MP3 streaming. When Shoutcast started, I sent a message. I don't know if either of you were on the PC Audio list back on the 31st of December 1998, saying that this was, you know, really going to take off and be huge. And people sort of thought I was daft, but you know, with about 18,000 streams now, you can't argue with the facts.
Yeah, and it's great because it gives the average person the opportunity, you know, to do real. You can get their tools for free, but you still have the bandwidth restrictions
you still can't, you know, you still can't put up a server the right way. There's no one else besides the streaming MP3 people that are doing that. Where, you know, I mean, look at people like Kevin Miner, look at people like, you know, people
Steve
like Wolf, Steve Wolf. You know, they've got radio stations. These guys, you know, I mean, I'm sure that they at some point or another they could afford to get the tools. But then what about all the bandwidth? I mean, it takes huge amounts of bandwidth to support this stuff, even for the low bandwidth stuff.
Yeah, it certainly has a lot of blind people who are, you know, wannabe broadcasters to fulfill that dream at least in webcasting.
Even now, I mean, and even now with ACB Radio, we've talked to ACB Radio about getting Windows Media support. And Windows Media support it can't be afforded right now because of the huge, you know, investment in bandwidth and stuff that it would require to handle it. So Live 365 is really a blessing in what they've done, and people like that, Shoutcast.com and Icecast.com.
Yeah.
Well, you know, these things all move along so quickly that even the cost issues will probably change drastically soon enough. I mean, I wouldn't know how soon, but, you know, these things tend to come down pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's right.
Along.
And you know, it's understood that there is a market for what's being called personal broadcasting, and I think eventually Microsoft and Real will probably get into that game, so that will even the score out a little bit. Anyway, Sam, I've got to wrap this up, so I'll have to push the button on you.
Oh, great. Thanks for another great program, Jonathan, and it's good hearing you, Michael. Good show.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, Mike, what we normally do is we talk to our guest for an hour, but we're at the end of the show. this has been a fascinating interview.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. It's always wonderful to talk to you, Jonathan. You know that.
I love
being able to answer any kind of question and stuff.
Okay, now we've got to do a couple of cleanup things here. Firstly, how do people subscribe to the radio webcaster list that you talked about?
You can visit our website at www.radiowebcaster.com, and there's a little window on the front, subscribe box, and you just subscribe, and eGroups will send you back a notification saying if you want to subscribe. And that's one way. Or you can go right to the Radio Webcaster homepage at www.radiowebcaster.com and look at the archives of the list, and it'll take you right to the archives, and you can take a look at all the talking that people have done about us, good and bad.
Okay, now the full package, which would be the transmitter, the remote control, which is radio based, so you can go through walls and things, and the software, that's $199, right?
No,
$149. Oh, there you go. And then you have the transmitter. How much do you sell that for?
$99.
Okay. And then, so what happens if you want to buy the remote control and the software like Sam does?
That's $49.95.
Okay. So
and
those are
all those are right. Those are all available, and we also have an option for an international power pack. For a power supply. Unfortunately, those come extremely expensive to us, so we do have to sell them. In addition to that, but also we do provide a Braille manual free of charge. If you do order a radio webcaster on the site, please be sure to ask for one. We are getting our web designer to put a checkbox up there for if you need a Braille manual or not.
I got a PowerPoint to run on our thing here, and it's reasonably cheap to do it locally.
Well, good. Yeah, there's some people we give them the specs if they ask for them and don't have a problem with that. Usually you should be able to find it. It's a very standard power level that the product uses.
Yeah, just make sure that you check on the original power pack that comes with it, the milliampage and the voltage, and otherwise your radio webcaster may become a toaster.
This is true.
When are we going to see this device you were talking about? What, the walking, talking, singing, dancing computer?
We are shooting for the end of the year, if not the beginning of next year.
You will be hearing more about it. We are coming out from undercover of our NDAs around October.
Good.
So
good.
I'm sure that I'll be back and tell you more about it.
Yeah.
Excuse
me. Yeah, those NDAs are bad news, man.
Yeah, I know, man. But hey, we've got to deal with them.
Yeah.
But I think that everybody's going to be quite excited about what's going on. I think that it's going to be a great thing. The technology is moving quickly, and I think that the prices of computers are coming down more and more every day. So it should be very cool to get these things into the hands of people for a very economical price.
Well, thank you so much for spending this couple of hours with us. It's been great, and we could have you back again and talk some more, because we haven't even talked about, you know, tips for budding entrepreneurs. So we'll make sure we come back and do it again sometime, and we'll certainly keep monitoring what's happening with your projects through Main Menu, where, of course, we cover technology issues. So thank you again.
Thank you.
That's Mike Calvo speaking to us live from Miami, Florida. And the site's www.radiowebcaster.com. And that's where we leave you for Blind Light. It's quite good that we've filled up the time, because you missed out on my tirade about the problems I've been having with the new network and the process of pinholing and firewalls and bizarre things like that and routers and, you know, but I won't be able to tell you all my stories about that because I'm going to go. We'll be back next week for Blind Line, same time, where our guest will be Brian Hartgen from Infotech, and our apologies for the little glitch in the middle. I do believe now that was caused by some work that was being done in the line room, where they are livening up a couple of ports out here for additional facilities that I need plugged in, and I think that's what probably switched us all off, that maybe they needed to turn off the router or something for a while there. Anyway, we're back, and we'll catch you next time. Thank you for your company. Bye for now. If you'd like to keep up to date with what's happening on ACB Radio, join our announcements list. You'll receive messages from ACB Radio staff about feature programs, scheduled outages, and website additions. To join this announcements-only email list, send a blank email to acbradio-announce-subscribe@egroups.com. That's acbradio-announce-subscribe@egroups.com. Stay in touch with ACB Radio, the station that's out of sight.